This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
I have Payne and Pendergast. No moves yesterday from the Texans. That felt kind of weird. It's been, for a team that's getting so much criticism in league circles for their offseason, it's hard to find a report card for the Texans that's giving them anything above like a C. Mm-hmm. Mostly because I think the Tunsil trade is viewed very differently outside of Houston than it's viewed in Houston.
And I get it, because for one especially, look, offseason grades are always about the short term, and hey, big names help a lot. And the only really big name when it comes to the Texans offseason was Laremy Tunsil getting traded away off of an offensive line that was one of the worst offensive lines in the league. So I don't even get overly sensitive or combative when people say it's an idiotic move, because on the surface it looks like that. The whole big, you know, what if in the scenario is, okay, how do you recover from this? And in most people's minds, it's, okay, well, if you get rid of Laremy Tunsil, you got to bring in some other name guys by offensive line standards. Not really any huge names, but notable guys that are really good starters right away. And the Texans, in not doing that, then the question becomes, all right, well, does your GM actually know what he's doing, and can he put together a good line? That's the part that it's a big what if, and you just don't know.
And yet, if I were to do superlatives for the offseason, I think my favorite move so far is the Laremy Tunsil trade. I mean, they haven't made a ton of moves that are like, oh yeah, that's my favorite right there. I mean, every free agent they've signed, Cam Robinson is by far the most expensive free agent they signed. He's 1 year, $12 million. They haven't made any big splashy moves in free agency. The bigger moves have been the trades. The Kenyon Green trade for C.J. Gardner-Johnson, the Christian Kirk trade, and then the Laremy Tunsil trade. I'm just going by my gut feel when I heard the news of any of these things. The Tunsil trade, Seth, and I said this the day after the trade, and I feel the same way now. I feel like a weight was lifted off of that room. I feel like the culture of that room was no longer being held hostage. Not that Laremy was somebody who was imposing his vibe and his energy on other people, but he was the one that they were looking to in that room as the leader and the direction. And I felt like, okay, now we can get to building that room the same way the whole rest of the team feels like. It's like that room was decorated completely differently than the rest of the house. The rest of the house is in this modern decor, and you've got this other room over here that's, you know, that's decorated in colonial or something like that.
Right. Well, and if you look at who they've rewarded most recently, the most notable big rewardings of guys on the team, Nico Collins, Danielle Hunter, Derek Stingley are very much guys who are blue-collar type players, and that they shut up and do their job, and they don't publicly grouse about their contracts or anything like that. They don't do side-eye emojis. They just do their job, and they do it really, really well. They're all just notably hard workers and all of that. So if you genuinely care about culture and everything else, it's not about whether a guy is a cancer in the locker room or not. It's who are we, by very much by actions more than words, who is the team demonstrating and showing that they want and they're going to reward? It's guys like that.
Yeah.
It's guys who practice and want to practice, even if they're in their 30s, because that's what's important. And I'm talking about Danielle Hunter there. And there's a lot about Laremy Tunsil that just doesn't fit that same culture. So when you start making decisions, you know, they say, hey, well, you had to get rid of Laremy Tunsil because there's other guys you have to pay. And I think it's interesting that one of the guys that they chose to pay big, big, big time was a guy who's older than Laremy Tunsil.
Danielle Hunter,
Danielle Hunter. Yeah, all right, well, Didn't seem to be a problem paying Danielle Hunter now, did it? But they didn't have it in them to pay Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I think, and Laremy did some media in Washington where he kind of indicated, like, hey, you know, they've drafted so well these last few years. You got to take care of these young guys. And I thought the same thing. I saw Clint tweet about it yesterday. Yeah, that whippersnapper, Danielle Hunter, you know, you got to find a way to take care of him. Yeah. So that is what it is. So my favorite move so far is actually the Tunsil trade, which I know outside of Houston, everybody's like, what are you talking about? Do you have a move that you think has been their best move so far this offseason?
I think the trade for C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, that's a good one.
I think that you're going to get impact play out of C.J. Gardner-Johnson that is, he might not be long for this team. I think that C.J. Gardner-Johnson has a big personality that maybe he has a shelf life. I don't know. Maybe that Houston defense ends up being the place where he's got some latitude to be his own guy, and he ends up being like a surprise extension sometime next year.
Well,
so
fun.
I'm very intrigued by that. And the fact that you got him for Kenyon Green.
Yeah.
And it made sense because this is why. This is one of those moves that multiple teams could have pulled that off. Philadelphia was going to get rid of C.J. Gardner-Johnson because they're purging salary. They got to pay these younger guys like Zach Bond that they wouldn't have even expected a year ago they were going to have to pay. So the fact that Caserio was ready and waiting and was able to take advantage of – he didn't have to give up a seventh-round pick. What was the complete swap?
They flip-flopped a fifth and a sixth. It was Kenyon and a fifth for C.J. Gardner-Johnson and a sixth.
And a sixth, yeah. Right. So whatever it was – instead of giving up a pick outright, you actually just get a player back and you unload Kenyon Green.
Yeah.
I like that move. The one that might end up being a bigger improvement overall was probably the trade for Christian Kirk. Yeah, and like that, but I guess just because that was a little bit more of a conventional trade, the fact that it was within the division and that it might embarrass the Jaguars in the regular
not
season,
not just the Jaguars,
I feel good about that.
It might embarrass the magnificent Gladstone.
Yes,
that would
yes.
be the key part there. Text in Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Do you guys have a favorite move that the Texans have made so far this offseason?
I have another question for the listeners too.
Okay,
I've been trying to be more steady with my YouTube stream, which is it's a solo deal. I'm just trying to get better at doing solo stuff. I can feel myself now when I'm with you rambling more than I should.
Oh, really?
I feel like I'm getting a little too long and drawn out. This is a hazard for some solo hosts. When they go on with other people, they forget that they're not doing a 10-minute monologue.
Okay.
So I might have to, if it's getting bad, I might have to have a little stopwatch that only allows me to go 30
seconds. Ben just start, like 45 seconds in, Ben just starts playing TikTok, TikTok, TikTok.
Play a drop of Brandy criticizing me for rambling on, all that type of stuff. Yeah.
No, you're good. You're good.
That's your opinion. I need to hear from the text line.
The people that matter, right?
And here are the seven reasons why. Hold on a minute, Sean. Hold on 7 minutes, Sean.
Yes, sit tight. I was trying to think of like worst move, and I think outside of Houston, people would go, well, worst move is a Tunsil trade. You traded away your best pass protector to protect a quarterback who got sacked 52 times last year. I don't feel that way. I feel the opposite about the Tunsil trade. I mean, people ignore the fact they did get a bunch of draft picks back for him, so it's not like they cut him or something like that. Like, they got something back, and they got cap space out of it, so they did get something out of trading him. I almost feel like the worst moves, Seth, for the Texans this offseason, because I can't look at any one move and go, well, that's stupid. Like, of all the signings, like, all their signings are 1 year, $3 million, 1 year, $5 million. Their signings are all penny stocks, largely, or just guys that are just cogs in the wheel, like Dario Gumbawale, 1 year, $2 million, guys like that. I can't get worked up over those. I guess if I were to say worst moves, it would be that if you were shopping for interior, like short-term interior offensive linemen, I would have been shopping in a slightly more expensive aisle than the one they were shopping in with Ingram and Lakin Tomlinson.
Yeah, Kevin Zeitler was the classic example of a guy. He's 35 years old. He got a one-year, $9 million deal with the Titans. I think that was a good move by the Titans. Now, the Titans also had what I think was a bad and dumb move, was giving Dan Moore $80 million to play tackle for them.
Yeah.
A move they wouldn't have made. They would have gladly given that amount of money to a much better offensive tackle than Dan Moore. But the Zeitler one was one that, it, I think it's a better version of the Ed Ingram signing. So I think Zeitler was a better guard last year than Ed Ingram was, and it was a 1-year deal for an aging guy. That didn't seem like too much of a stretch. And I would imagine if Zeitler had been offered 1 year, $9 million by the Texans, if he had to choose between the Titans and the Texans, I got to think, unless there's a connection there that I'm not thinking of with the Titans, I got to think he would rather go to the Texans.
Mm. Yeah, I'm trying to wonder if somewhere along the way, Kevin Zeitler was on a line that was coached by Bill Callahan, maybe?
Right, right. You know? Yeah. No, if there was a connection, then I get it. But but still, all the struggles the Texans offense had last year, notwithstanding, the Titans had the same, but amplified, and without a quarterback that you feel good about.
My text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, my least favorite move that the Texans have made this offseason is keeping Titus Howard. I would say this, not just keeping Titus Howard, but, I mean, he's definitely going to be around. They restructured his deal. You restructure somebody's deal, they are sticky for at least one or two more years with you.
I think he's sticky for this year.
Yeah.
There's still things they could do next year. What it does for the player, from the player's standpoint, when they restructure your deal that way, it's nice because, A, you get a big bunch of signing bonus or guaranteed money up front, and that's always nice. But then also, by pushing a bunch of money into next year, the team then is motivated to either put up or shut up when it comes to maybe giving you a genuine extension or letting you go. So, it's an investment of sorts of confidence in Titus Howard. I think they want to see how he operates, perhaps without Laremy Tunsil in the building. And just sometimes when the team tells a player, hey, listen, man, you're one of our veteran guys right now, and we really need to be able to lean on you for certain things on the leadership side of things, just in terms of setting example. Sometimes guys take a gigantic leap forward because you're in that role.
Yeah.
As opposed to being the little buddy to the big dog. Where he was, for a long time, Titus has been, in the old Looney Tunes cartoons, whoever the little dog was that was next to Spike, the bulldog.
Yeah, he wanted to go chase cars with Spike all the time. We gonna go chase cars, Spike?
Yeah. Now
Titus.
He can be the new Spike.
Yes.
And there's a certain responsibility that comes with that. Anybody listening, whenever you were, the first time you were ever made a captain of a team, when you were in junior high or high school, you know what I'm talking about. You kind of almost automatically, without thinking about it, start conducting yourself differently because you know people are watching you and looking to you as an example. So I think the team might be playing it out with Titus and hoping that maybe a little bit of that is what happens.
Text message, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. The last couple of years, the Rams had a good offensive line made up of late-round nobodies. Hoping Nick Caley brings that L.A. magic here. Yeah, I hope so, too. Because that's, I don't know that it's late round nobodies. I mean, Juice Scruggs is a second rounder. Titus Howard's a first rounder. Blake Fisher's a second rounder. There's plenty of pedigree on this offensive line, but it's not, the performance level is very average or below average. Yeah.
What's interesting, because it's a great point about the Rams, and if you look at it, that's one thing the Rams have done well. Well, people were saying the Rams were all about screw them picks. They drafted really well. They had a lot of draft picks, just not first-round draft picks. Yeah. They did really well in the second through fifth rounds. Havenstein, their tackle, is a second-rounder. Steve Avia, their guard, he's a second-rounder, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then their center was a fifth or sixth-rounder. That's exactly where there's so many examples throughout the history of the NFL of just blue-collar offensive lines that by being well-coached way overperform their draft status and their contract statuses. And that's the Bill James theory in baseball was always that, hey, a roster full of average guys, if coached and managed properly, can be really competitive. I love to extend that Bill James theory to offensive line because that's exactly how I feel about offensive line play. And a line full of five average guys, if coached properly and if you take advantage of their strengths, you can be a really solid offensive line. And then if you hit on your draft picks then and get a stud in an overperformance or maybe a find in a sixth-round pick or something, that's where you can become a genuinely stud offensive line. But you don't have to have name-brand guys to be a good offensive line.
Multiple people on the text page saying Zeitler has family in Tennessee.
So, there you go.
Yeah,
okay.
So, all right.
And he's 35 years old. He's an old man. It's time to to think about what matters. Good. Yeah. Good. I hope we embarrass you in front of your family.
Twice.
I hope we destroy you while your family is watching in Tennessee.
That's right.
Make them embarrassed.
That's right.
All your first cousin slash nanny slash granny slash auntie. Your first cousin auntie slash also married your brother. Yeah, they're all watching you, inbred losers.
Embarrass you in front of that whole straight line that is your family tree. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The circle.
You had to go back to Tennessee to be sure that the gene pool didn't get too diversified.
That's right.
Marry off your chillin' to their first cousins. Great.
What's
great.
This picture of a circle? That's my family tree right there. It's a picture of a circle. Swarmiest move made. Is there really any argument in this one? It's got to be C.J. Gardner-Johnson, right? If we're doing superlatives for the offseason. C.J. Gardner-Johnson, over under number of weeks, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is in the circle of swarm next year.
It's tough because the circle of swarm, a lot of times it's hard. We have to exclude people that we really, really like.
Yeah, you can only have six each week. That's the thing.
So I think, who was the record holder last week?
Last year, I've got the scorecard in front of me here. For those who don't know what that is, Seth and I do a segment every Friday during the season called the Circle of Swarm, where we reward and forecast the swarmiest players on the team. I think is the easiest way to couch that. The winner,
which is D'Amico's chosen acronym for Special Work Ethic and Relentless Mindset.
Basically, guys who just wreck shop on Sundays. The winner last year for most weeks was Daniil Hunter with 11, followed by Stingley and Aziz with 10. I like that that's interesting that the two swarmiest guys, Stingley and Hunter, were the two guys who just got big contracts, right? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. You know, it's almost like we're paying attention when we talk to Nick Caserio.
It feels weird,
You know?
It feels strange. Nico Collins, 9, another guy who got a big contract last year.
The three guys that we just mentioned as having been rewarded with big extensions.
I feel good.
I'll tell you what, players are going to start monitoring this circle of swarm.
They should. Jalen Petrie better keep his eye on this damn thing. He's up for an extension. Mixon and Stroud, 7. I would say that matches the eye test. Will Anderson Jr., 6. He was injured for part of the year. And on and on and on. So that's kind of the numbers. And keep in mind, we didn't start doing it till week 3 last year.
Okay.
It's
become such an institution that I didn't even realize this was the first year we did it.
Yeah.
So I think that the tough thing is going to be if this team plays the way they did last year on defense, they had the second most interceptions in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And Derek Stingley would tell you himself, it felt like they should have had 8 or 9 more interceptions.
Yeah.
If they get on the jugs machine, I think there will be more interceptions next year. I think that I'm going to put the over-under on C.J. Gardner-Johnson at probably about 7.
I was going to say 6.5,
A lot of times when it comes to the secondary, we almost feel like, all right, we've got too many candidates. Let's just put one guy from the secondary in the circle of swarm this week.
Yeah.
I'll say 7.5.
I almost feel like it's a lock too that C.J. Gardner-Johnson at some point this year is going to get like a 2-game suspension for being a little too swarmy because he's on a team. He's on a team that's kind of under the microscope for that of the last couple of years.
That defense almost feels a little bit too like almost like the way I operate my gang. Which is you got to commit a felony to get in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's partly to find out whether they have the metal to be in my gang, but also because then we got something on them.
Right,
you know, to create and demand loyalty because we got something on them. So I feel like he's going to feel like he's got to pay that price of initiation at some point and get a suspension or a hefty fine. that might buck it down a little bit.
Good.
He's the kind of gang member when I bring him in where I'm kind of like I'm hemming and hawing and I'm like because you know I want the guy to commit and I'd be like well there's one thing that you know we didn't tell you about initially which is that. At some point, I'm going to ask you to murder somebody here in the next 2 weeks. And then I look over to see if he's paying attention, and he's actually got his hands around the throat of somebody, like actively killing him.
Right.
Like he's already, like, I know that kid's a whippersnapper.
He knows,
that kid's going places.
He's trying to get ahead. Yeah.
I like it.
Okay, I don't know if this is someone legitimately asking you this question on the text page, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text page, or someone who knows it. If I ask you this question, they may get a different kind of answer.
It's going to trigger me? Okay.
Not only going to trigger you. Seth, can you explain what a jugs machine is?
Oh, okay. No, that's a very fair question.
That's a fair machine.
Yeah. That's a very good one. You know what? I'm going to write that down. I got a football 101 series of videos I'm working on of just like very basic questions that people are afraid to ask. Like what is nickel defense? I did that.
Yeah.
But one of the most Googled questions is?
What's that?
What is a quarterback? So I think most people listening to this show know what a quarterback is.
God,
but there are a lot of people out there, especially internationally, that don't know what a quarterback is.
Boy, because we have pretty good numbers, especially on the streaming and things and our podcast.
Yeah.
If we have these types of numbers and it's a bunch of people who don't know what a quarterback is, we may need to reevaluate doing here.
Those are like a lot of those are international queries of what is a quarterback.
Yeah.
The jugs machine is you guys will see with the little it's like the pitching machine for footballs. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost over-explained it.
Yeah.
It's the pitching machine for footballs.
It throws
the football or punts the football for you.
Yep.
So that's when you see receivers and sometimes J.J. Watt working, catching ball after ball after ball. It's because the jugs machine is throwing it to
you. Are you intrigued? I've got a couple of the journeyman types that they signed that intrigue me. This Daryl Taylor that they signed from Chicago, the edge rusher. I don't know how much time he's going to see, but we do know that Will Anderson, at least in his first two seasons, you've been able to pencil him in for missing a couple of games with these ankle issues. The guys that are backing up, you know, there's no Jerry Hughes anymore. They did bring back Derek Barnett. This Daryl Taylor, edge rusher they got from Chicago for about $5 million for a year, has some very interesting pass rush numbers, sack numbers. For a guy who's just a one-year dude, I'm just intrigued. I don't watch Bears football all that often. Guy had 9.5 sacks a couple of years ago. He's got 24.5 sacks over a four-year period. That's not nothing. And from what you read, his win rates in terms of pass rush and things like that seem to exceed what a one-year, $5 million guy should be. I'm intrigued by that one.
If you can do one thing really well, because he's not an undersized guy at all. It's weird because he's height and weight, he's about the same as Will Anderson, but he seems like a lankier guy. Mm-hmm. When I watch him, I look at him, I like he's like a tweener type. No, he's actually pretty. He's big enough to be a 4-3 defensive end. Yeah, like a lot of guys that have come in on that defensive line, like Derek Barnett, and Derek Barnett is a bigger name, and but was on the downside. Seemingly of his career, and has made some big impact plays for the Texans in the last couple years. I think that a lot of defensive linemen would probably look at the Texans right now as a prove it year type of place, and that might be it for him. And they obviously for giving him $5 million, they see something in him.
The second one for me is Ronald Darby, who they just signed yesterday officially. They signed him 1 year, $2.5 million. And the reason I say that, not that Ronald Darby is anything all that great, but Kamari Lassiter missed a few games last year. Derek Stingley Jr., you know, do we know that he's all of a sudden become this guy who's going to play every snap of every game like he did last year? They were at a point last year when you'd lose a cornerback, Seth, and you're putting D'Angelo Ross out there for literally 100% of the snaps. Darby is at least a vet who has accomplished some things in the league, who I don't think is washed or anything. I don't think he's a great player. But if one of these two guys are going to get hurt, you put Ronald Darby out there at corner. I don't feel awful like I did when D'Angelo Ross got put out there last year.
Well, and there's a certain part of Darby where I think you look at him and you think he's a veteran player. I'm not thinking that he's got untapped upside or anything like that. He's on the downside of his career, but he can go in there and do what he's supposed to do. As opposed to some of the signings they made last year where, okay, hey, Jeff Okuda, he's still got upside, and he's kind of sort of a veteran player, even though you don't expect consistency out of him. I actually, in a weird way, I feel better about Darby than Okuda, even though I was intrigued by Okuda's upside. If they have to play Darby for a couple games or for spells during the season, it's good to have guys like that. And it's good to have, given that some of the mental errors they had by younger guys last year, the more veteran savvy you can have back there and in the meeting room, I like that. Feels a little bit like a Jerry Hughes type of move.
Yeah.
Jerry Hughes might end up being on the Texans at various points until he's 40 years old, just because I think they like having him in the meeting room.
I don't know if you saw this, completely shifting gears here. We'll read some of your texts answering and addressing some of the things that Seth and I were just doing, but I wanted to get to this. Shannon Sharp was doing his podcast. I think it was Club Shay Shay he was doing it. Shannon Sharp's got a lot of stuff going on, man. Between TV and his podcast work, he had Young Miami on, who is a female rapper from, I believe, from Miami, of all places. And had her on his episode that I saw drop yesterday. And she was talking about wanting to get fixed up with football players. And was looking for advice from Shannon Sharp on who to, you know, like what position group, like football position, what players out there. Here's how that, Texan fans, brace yourself. Here's how that conversation went.
I like offense.
Okay.
I like when the ball is in your court. I like the ones that got to, like, you know.
They got to catch the ball and do something with the ball.
Yeah.
Okay. So you like wide receivers, running backs?
Yeah, maybe a quarterback, too.
Quarterback? You like the quarterback?
Ooh, the quarterback. I ain't never had no quarterback. I'm just saying. Yeah. You know, they're the MVP, you know.
Yeah. But most of the quarterbacks, they're like, they either married or have a serious relationship. So I'm trying to get you something that, you know.
So who would you hook me up with? If you had to, like, put me on a blind date, or if you can, like...
Ooh-wee!
Who you gonna give me?
Damn. That's a very good question. I don't know if C.J. Stroud... You know C.J. Stroud? Mm-hmm. Quarterback for the Texans?
Why would you go C.J.?
I damn, you just asked me to hook you up. I'm trying to hook you up. Now you say, why go him?
That man is a Christian.
You might can change it.
Get out. Yes. Get out.
I'll tell you what, though. She knows ball.
She does
know
ball.
Or at the very least, she's paying attention. She knew immediately. She had a little bit of a scouting report on C.J. Stroud. You know what? I respect her. I respect that. I think in that situation, she wasn't even trying to say that's not what I would want. I don't think she wants to potentially either corrupt him or whatever it might be. That, like, he lives his life his way. I don't, you know, I live my life my way, and it's probably not going to be a good match. I like that. Except that now there's a kernel in her brain that Shannon may have planted in there.
She was in a relationship with Diddy for multiple years. I'm out.
She's dated James Harden.
Yeah, has she? Oh, man.
Well, according to whosdatedwho.com.
Oh, okay.
She's also dated Future, supposedly.
Okay.
As well as several other producers and entertainers.
So she's like a level removed from Russell Wilson, theoretically, then. You know, like via intercourse. Yeah. You know, like you can draw a line, you know, from her to Russell Wilson through Future.
Listen.
Via Future and Sierra, yeah.
Listen, this has nothing to do with young Miami herself. I know nothing about her. My general rule is that I don't like athletes that I care about dating any kind of celebrity.
Yeah.
Some people can handle it and they do remarkably well. But it invites all kinds of extra complexity into your relationship. All kinds of every little thing that might be a stumbling block in a relationship normally gets amplified by a factor of 10.
Yeah.
So I don't want CJ to date a celebrity personally. That's my wish. I hope he meets a quiet person of some sort that kind of just is in the shadows and they can just live their lives privately.
Dude,
that's all I ask for any athlete.
I don't need anybody within 2 degrees of Diddy. Just period, end of subject.
Yeah, because that's a whole other thing that, man, with Diddy, yeah, you got to evaluate. This is young people out there.
Yeah.
When you're getting serious with somebody, you got to evaluate, does this person have a psychotic ex? Because that problem becomes your problem when the person's psychotic.
At least you know where he is right now. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
he's not
going to
come up from behind and, you know, hit you with a blackjack on the back of the head or anything like that. He's incarcerated right now.
Would you rather date somebody whose ex is Diddy or their ex is Kanye?
Oh, wow.
I feel like Diddy's more of a conventional threat, I think. Whereas Kanye, you never know what's coming.
Yeah.
Or what conspiracy theory you're going to be tied to or anything else like
now,
that.
Now, look, Kanye has said some horrible, abominable things of late and in recent past. Diddy has done some things that are going to get him put in jail for a long, long time if he gets convicted. So with Kanye, it's a lot of words. With Diddy, it's a lot of actions. But just reading some of the stories in the last 24 hours about Kim Kardashian having to go grab North out of Kanye's house when he was having North in for a visit because he had those two Tate brothers in or whatever.
Yeah.
And,
you know,
and then Kanye's making fun of, you know, making fun of Beyonce and Jay-Z's kids online. Like, Kanye would be the constant pain in your ass every day.
And you never know when it's going to come. It's going to be at 3 a.m. all of a sudden out of nowhere. I've got a naked Kanye in my yard.
He'll never go away. Like, it's none of it's stuff that's going to get him put in jail. Like, Diddy's going to get put away eventually here probably, and then he's not your problem anymore.
Diddy, in a lot of ways, it would feel like kind of dealing with a conventional, like an old mafioso, where it's like, okay, there's a certain level of respect between what foes or opponents, and as long as you just abide by that, then it's probably going to be all right. Kanye, you just have no idea. Yeah. Kanye rips up the contract the moment he walks out of the room.
They're both terrible, terrible people. They're both awful.
Kanye's just, I feel like Kanye's mentally ill. Diddy might just be more. Diddy's just more of a.
Sociopathic criminal, yeah. All right, back to the text page here. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer. I just wanted to play that for everybody so they could be equally vigilant in making sure that CJ stays out of a relationship that could negatively affect our football team and him, but mostly our football team. Titus Howard looked fat. This is a text, not me. Titus Howard looked fat and out of shape at times last year. Oh, I kind of agree with that. He needs to have a good offseason. Okay, we talk about body types. You know, remember we talked about who's the guy that's going to come in the training camp this year? Like Will Anderson last year. We're like, oh, that guy looks different. I kind of hope it's Titus Howard this year.
Right, and he doesn't have to be a drastic transformation or anything. He looked huge at camp.
Yes.
And I don't know what his listed weight was or anything. He looked huge, and he was having... That especially bothers me when a guy is also recovering from, was it surgery last year or injury, whatever it was that limited him in training camp. Remember the first 3 weeks of camp, you didn't have the starting offensive tackles out there.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the interior offensive line was like, oh, yep, nope, 100%. Kenyon Green's the guy. We've got undying faith in Kenyon Green.
Dude, remember how bad the offense was early on in training camp? Remember, that was a big topic. Like, wow. C.J. Stroud really is the leader of this team because he's getting visibly agitated with his teammates out there.
Yeah.
You know?
Boy, man. And then I remember having a conversation with somebody at training camp, somebody who I like but who I think was being fed O-line propaganda.
Yeah.
Because we were having a conversation about why the O-line was struggling, and he said something that I know came from the offensive line because this is what offensive linemen do.
Mm-hmm.
They make excuses for themselves in training camp by saying, well, We can't run block the way we would in games, so that's why they're destroying us 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage every single play.
Right.
And I'm like, listen, man, I've heard this story before. This is what bad offensive linemen do.
Yes.
When they make excuses during training camp. Every time you win in a pass rush, usually what they'll do too, the telltale. Back in the day when cut blocking was more of a factor, you would beat an offensive lineman and they would yell, "Cut block!" As if to say, well, in a game, I would have cut block you.
Oh,
like, all right. Well, you know what I see good offensive linemen do in training camp? Win, despite not being able to cut block and everything. When we were talking about Mario Edwards and Foley Fatakasi, like they were going to be all pros last year during training camp, I realize, oh man, we might have an issue here.
Yep.
Yeah, we might have an issue here because unless all of a sudden Mario Edwards and Foley Fatakasi are completely different human beings than they were in the first 5 to 7 years of their career, this offensive line is going to have some issues.
Text message, all caps, get the hotkey ready, Ben. Get out, demon. The power of Christ compels you.
Get out.
What's her name? Young Miami?
Young Miami. Yeah.
I really respect it. Young Miami said that, basically said, well, no, he's.
She knew who he was.
He's living a different life than I am.
Yeah. She knew who.
I feel like she's done her homework, though, too. At first, I got a little offended because she said, why would you put CJ on me?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, oh, he's not good enough for you? And then she explained, he's a Christian.
Yeah. She may not adhere to some of the same belief system that CJ has.
Yeah.
Young Miami would go with Lamar Jackson. Well, Lamar Jackson is from down there, I will say that. If CJ's going to go with a rapper, it's probably going to be a West Coast rapper, I would say. You know, he's big in the Cali scene. Yeah.
I would tell you, I'd be nervous about as a young woman dating a young quarterback. I know that both of those young men have very close relationships with their mothers. I feel like Lamar Jackson's mom would be one where you got to go in and be ready for, like, okay,
because
she's the business person
she's
in that relationship.
Agent, yeah.
I feel like I feel like Kim Stroud is probably more like, hey, I got to let CJ be CJ. Yeah, he's going to do what young men do, and he'll make some mistakes in love, but whatever. I feel like Lamar Jackson's mom might be a little bit more on hands, so or hands-on. So, yeah, that, if I had to choose, if I were a young woman and I had to choose based on potential relationship with mother-in-law, I would go with CJ.
Oh, I don't know why this text makes me laugh. Is that rapper Young Miami of Ohio? There needs to be a Young Miami of Ohio rapper made as a sort of a counterpoint to Young Miami of Florida. Like just this completely sloppy white woman from Toledo or something like that. This is Young Miami of Ohio right here.
Young Miami of Ohio has a muffin top going. It doesn't look the way she thinks
it does.
Hanging
out over mom jeans, you know?
Definitely like an old faded, distorted tramp stamp because she got it back when she was really into meth.
Oh, yeah. It's oh, that's great. Young Miami of Ohio. Oh, I love our listeners. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, mock draft injection time, 7:45 each and every day till the draft. We do it. This one is from NFL.com by a guy named Mike Band, who is a next-gen stats guy, and he was bragging at the beginning of this mock draft, Seth, that he's finished fifth out of 75 draft experts over the last 5 years in accurately predicting what the actual draft turns out as.
Wow.
Yeah, right. So I figure this guy would be a good one. So this is, I feel like there's a 99% chance that we're getting the player that Mike Band of NFL.com, NGS Nerd, has in his mock draft. We do the injection coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Seth, trusting the texters with factual stuff is always can be a dicey proposition, but I'll believe this texter when I read this. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Young Miami was at a couple Texans games last year. She was supposedly seeing Stephon Diggs.
Oh, okay. So that's how she had her intel on CJ Stroud being perhaps maybe a little too religious for her tastes or likings.
Yeah.
Or she didn't want to corrupt a young and innocent CJ Stroud. Yeah. You know what I like about that? I like that maybe if indeed she was dating Stephon Diggs and she had conversations with Stephon about CJ Stroud, maybe Stephon saying like, yeah, boy, the kid's just, he's as pure as the driven snow. And I know about snow because I played in Buffalo. Let's get back to talking about me.
Yes. Someone said, imagine Young Miami dating Sam Darnold. Oh, dude, Sam Darnold dating a female rapper. I would watch that reality show for sure.
She would lay down the law with him. Poor Sam Darnold. There'd be all kinds of shots of him walking in behind her, going into an awards show, carrying her purse, three purses and everything else that he had to do. And her telling him to shut his hoe ass up when he objected to her flirting with Future or something.
Exactly. All right, mock draft injection time. We do it 7:45 every day until draft time. It's gotten a little more interesting with the Texans kind of fiddling around with the offensive line, more than fiddling around with the offensive line this offseason. I mean, they've damn near tore it down, and they're trying to build it back up now. But the twists and turns along the way that felt like it would affect how the Texans look at the draft probably were the Laremy Tunsil trade, where offensive line shoots way to the top of the list of needs. And then with signing Cam Robinson this week, I don't know that it should really change how they look at it, but in the short term, if the short term was a big deal to them, it's probably slightly less of a big deal with Cam Robinson, so we'll see. But this one, Seth, is NFL.com. Mike Band is the name of the mock drafter here. And he says this about his approach. So this is what we should know when we play who he has the Texans taking here in a minute or so. My approach is research-driven. I blend insider reports, team needs, scheme fits, apparent organizational philosophy, and odds to connect dots and predict what each club's decision makers might do when they're on the clock. So he has a lot of different elements that go into how he does this. He's a next-gen stats guy. Goes on to brag a little bit. My track record speaks for itself. Over the last 5 years, I've ranked fifth in overall accuracy among 75 draft experts, and he hyperlinked fifth in overall accuracy to take you to the article that shows this.
Yeah. Okay?
Including a second-place finish among 172 experts a year ago. So last year, he was the second.
Getting better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. In 2009, he had the most accurate mock draft on record at the time. While connecting every dot in a first-round mock is impossible, matching players with teams ahead of draft night is very much within reach. So here we go, 5 weeks out from the draft. We're 5 weeks from yesterday.
Listen, fella, there was a stretch of time, too, when people thought Colin Cowherd was some kind of a magician when it came to making picks because he had a good run. All right?
Yeah.
All right? Yeah.
We're putting him in his place.
Let's give it another 5 years, Mike Band. But that's when you become a real draft expert.
That's right.
When you always, yes, you very much highlight when your mock draft was right. When it wasn't right, you say, everybody knows that, like, it's not about the actual prediction. It's about just the process of it all.
Yeah, that's
everybody
right.
knows that.
No caveat it. All right, so who's he got the Texans taking here with the 25th pick? With the 25th pick in the Mike Band, Braggy, Next Gen Stats, NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Mecca Abuka, wide receiver, Ohio State. Now, here's what's interesting about what he says. With Tank Dell's late-season injury creating uncertainty at receiver, the Texans select Abuka to serve as an immediate playmaker for their young quarterback. Okay. Polished as a route runner, dangerous after the catch, the Ohio State product can thrive in the slot or as a Z receiver opposite Nico Collins. Even with Laremy Tunsil gone, Houston believes Titus Howard can solidify left tackle, freeing them to focus on the skill group early and the interior O-line on day two. This was dropped yesterday afternoon, so no mention. I thought it was interesting. No mention of Cam Robinson at left tackle. He's talking about Titus Howard at left tackle. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's I guess I'm a little surprised when people speak with complete confidence about where Titus Howard will play next year. And a lot of times it's people that I think are really smart people, and yet some of those smart people have differing opinions. I think it's wide open right now. I think that there's no way you can put Cam Robinson in as the day one starter at left tackle. I think a lot of it hinges on what they feel about the draft class, and if they draft a guy in the first round, if he's a guard or a tackle, how does he look during training camp? How do they feel about Blake Fisher as training camp progresses? So there's a lot of variables there, and it could look any one of five different configurations come day one. Ibuka, I think that really the signing of Cam Robinson and the signing of like the two veteran offensive guards so far, it puts you in a position where you don't feel like there's a glaring, oh, what the hell are we going to do situation if you had to go out and play a game with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows you to maybe more take best player available. Ibuka, at this point, I wonder if they look at it, and there's a lot to like on the leadership side of things, on the football IQ side of things, all of those things. But when it comes to just pure, unadulterated athleticism and quickness, does he have the same upside that some of the other guys have? And they already, I don't want to get too married to the definition of a slot receiver or anything. I think Ibuka can play slot, he can play outside. Same way Christian Kirk can play slot and play outside. But I wonder if they look at him more as a guy that would be a really good find in the second round. But when you're trying to look for extreme upside in the first round, I don't know if Ibuka's the guy they
If
go
Golden
for.
And Ibuka are there, I'll be a little disappointed if they take Ibuka over Matthew Golden from Texas.
Yeah, and I think the comparison a lot of people bring up, which I think is fair, but it's almost so loaded that I don't want to use it, but they'll say, okay, is this just a better version of John Metchie? He's not necessarily a guy that has great short area quickness and twitch and everything, but he's a good guy and he competes and he does all those things the right way. And I think that's got a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth given our high expectations of John Metchie.
Mm-hmm.
But I tend to agree with him a little bit. I think that D'Amico wants guys who can really separate, and route running is a lot to do with that, but at the NFL level, it's route running plus twitchiness, and I just don't know if that's what... I don't think that Ibuka is good enough at that side of it to set him apart from if Tyler Booker, the guard, is there at that point, or if Matthew Golden is there at that point. I think that they go with guys who are a little bit more classic first-round prospects.
Yeah, I can see that. This Mike Band, who's mock drafted, has the Chiefs trading up to 24 right in front of the Texans to take Josh Simmons, who we've spent a ton of time on over the last few days in this segment. So maybe, you know, in his world, maybe he feels like the Chiefs need offensive line help, right?
Yeah.
And that
they
feel like the Texans are a team where Josh Simmons could land in this world that we're in. That would be interesting if the if somebody jumped right in front of the Texans to take a guy at a position of need for the Texans.
Right. And so this is what's interesting to watch on draft day or draft weekend is that Nick talks continuously about wanting to find a band of players where you've got a certain group of guys that have a good grade and you think that, okay, we take any one of these three or four guys, we'd feel pretty good about it at this position. He doesn't fall in love with individuals, but it's going to be interesting as the draft unfolds if you start to see a couple of offensive linemen start to drop. If and all of a sudden it looks like, oh, there's a band of offensive linemen available right now. If Nick makes a move at that point, that where he can, okay, he's taking the best player available, but he maneuvered to get to a spot where the best player available was an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm anticipating. If I had to handicap it, I think Nick moves up in the first round, but it's not an overly aggressive one. It's up into the 20 spot or something to where a guy's that really could have been top 15 picks have started to slide, and he likes being right there.
It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be a fun draft night, a fun night one for sure. Someone's asking on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line, is Booker still available in this draft when we pick Abuka? He actually is. He's still available in this draft. Tyler Booker ends up going three picks later to the Detroit Lions.
Okay, this is so if I have to choose between Emeka Abuka, a wide receiver, and Tyler Booker, an offensive guard, if one of the holdups with either of those guys, a wide receiver and a guard, is that they don't test all that well or they're not as athletic or as fast as the other guys, give me the guard all day long.
Yes.
Because it's a lot easier to overcome average athleticism at guard. You can overcome that with technique. You can overcome that with intelligence. You can overcome that a million different ways at guard. It's a lot harder at wide receiver.
Wide receiver, you're just a guy who can't get open. if that's the case.
He runs immaculate routes.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider the fact that he's got a defensive back attached
draped
to him the whole time.
Yes.
With his hand, a defensive back has his hand delicately placed on his hip the entire time.
And he still runs just where you want him to go.
Yeah.
All right, into the 8 o'clock hour we go. Derek Stingley Jr. had his press conference 2 days ago on Wednesday. He had some really interesting things to say, though, on Texans All Access. John Harris and Mark Vandermeer are always able to get a few nuggets that you don't get in the press conference, particularly on Stingley's run defense and his description of one of the best plays of the season. Listening to Stingley go through it is just really, really cool. We'll have that for you coming up next.